to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, this is Joanna Penn for the Creative Pen Podcast, and today I'm interviewing Tony Eldridge. Tony is the author of The Samson Effect and also runs the Marketing Tips for Authors blog, which is packed with great information on book marketing. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Joanne.
It's good to have you here. So maybe you could just start by telling us a bit about you and your background in writing and also marketing.
Sure, I'd be happy to. You know, first of all, I do want to let you know how much I appreciate the opportunity to spend this time with your listeners. Anytime I have an opportunity to meet new people and talk with new people, I'm sincerely thankful for it. So I appreciate that. I wrote my first unpublished novel, which is still unpublished, called The Lottery Ticket, back in 2004. And I kind of call that my training novel because I had this dream of being a novel, and I went through all the fantasies that every person who dreams about writing a novel has. I'm going to make it to the bestsellers list. And before I ever really knew what was involved in writing. And so I read, about 30 books on the craft of writing, and I really took it seriously. And The Lottery Ticket, which was an action-adventure book, was the book I think that taught me how to write. And I kind of put it away. It's collecting dust. I may do something with that in the future. But I think that kind of prepared my way for my first published book, which is called The Samson Effect, which is also an action-adventure book, kind of ratcheted up with the adventure. And that released in October of 2007. Now, during the time I was writing these books, I also served as a sales and marketing director for a company called Technical Lead. We had websites under the umbrella of our company called Learn Flash, Watch and Learn Photoshop, Learn Web Development. And what we did was create online training videos for people to learn how to do some of these complex programs. And my role as sales and marketing director was to go out there basically and find people to watch our videos, to buy our videos. And so when I published my book, The Samson Effect, I tried to bring with the marketing part of it everything I knew and everything I learned in the business part. And that's really the genesis of how I came up with Marketing Tips for Authors. It's a blog that anyone can sign up for, and I share some of my experience in real-life marketing products that I used in marketing my book that I think that authors can use in marketing their book. I share those tips with people, and I also look for some of the best experts I can find on the internet as guests to come on and write guest posts. And so kind of combining my skills, work skills, and writing the book, I think I've touched into a niche that a lot of authors find themselves unprepared for, and that is after the work's done, after we publish the book, what do we do?
Mm. No, you're absolutely right, and you know, I think it's great that you combine those skills. So there's a few questions coming out of what you just said there. I love the fact that you're the lottery ticket you describe as a training novel, which I think many people who want to write a book possibly don't realize that they will go on and do more books. So where was your head at when you wrote The Lottery Ticket? Did you think it was a training novel, or, you know, was it the book you always wanted to write?
Actually, it was the book I always wanted to write. I did not write it with the intentions of being a training novel, but it just turned out that way. I was fortunate enough to be pragmatic in my vision of where I wanted to be and where I wanted to go as an author. And I had this business sense that I was able to really take stock and say, okay, what is the best route that I need to pursue in order to be commercially successful with my book. And at the time when I really looked at the lottery ticket and I looked at the type of story it was and all the major revision I would have to go back and redo, I realized that, you know, this wasn't it. If I wanted to be serious as an author and I wanted to try to make this a serious attempt, then I'm either going to have to spend just about as much time back into this book to make it successful, or I can start from scratch taking some of the principles and come out with a new story. And that's really what I did. And it was just a choice I made at the time because I had this new storyline already going around in my head. And I was looking at all the things I had learned in the lottery ticket. And I said, wow, if I could do this in the Samson effect, or if I can approach delivering the tension or the suspense this way, then I could really do a better job at crafting a story.
And that's that's fantastic. And I guess, you know, and I'm trying to encourage people who are writing their first book who might not see that future step, you know. So how long did it take you to write the lottery ticket?
The lottery ticket took me about probably 2.5 months to write. Mm-hmm. It happened during a time when I moved from about the time I moved from Indiana to Texas, and my wife was so good at giving me the time I needed to do it. But it took me about 9 months to go back and revise and edit. So the whole process took me close to a year from start to finish.
Right. And you were working a full-time job there and you have a family?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So you spent this whole year doing it. And then I love the fact that you basically, you know, then looked at it and put it away and moved on to the next one. Because once you start writing, you get more ideas, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. Writing is such an interesting craft. If you really get into it, and once you do, the ideas just start coming, the inspiration, whatever you want to call it, really start coming out from some unexpected places. You know, I sat down and I wrote both of my books, The Lottery Ticket and The Samson Effect, at a Starbucks. And I would sit down and write everything longhand in pen. But just being exposed to that environment led to so many more, or so much more ideas, I guess, when it comes to writing my book.
So. No, I think that it's a fantastic.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. No, it does. And that's brilliant. I really want to, because I mean, I've written now 3 nonfiction, but I'm just trying to start writing the first novel as such. And, and I kind of feel that same way about it. It's like, well, it doesn't matter what, you know, I want to try and do a good book the first time. But to me, I also see this from so many authors now that I also understand that the first one can often be a training novel. So, you know, just to encourage other people out there. Okay, so let's talk about the Samson Effect, because just reading about it online, is that at thesamsoneffect.com or something?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So people can go and have a look at that. It sounds a little Dan Brown-esque to me. So did you aim to follow that sort of blockbuster religious thriller action adventure thing, or was that always your, you know, your interest?
That wasn't what I was trying to do, but the very first interview I had, or not interview, the very first review I had in my book brought that up, made a comparison to Dan Brown and the Da Vinci Code. Mm. And it really kind of surprised me because, again, I wasn't really going there. If there was any form of inspiration for the Samson Effect, it probably would be the writers who I just read everything they write, the Clive Cusslers, the James Rollins, even James Patterson. Those people know how to craft a story to make people's eyes riveted to the page. And they were huge inspirations. If you look into the movie world, probably the series of movies that inspired the Samson Effect more than anything else were the Indiana Jones trilogies. And this book came out before the new Indiana Jones was released. But if you remember Harrison Ford's Indiana Jones, they dealt with kind of religious icons in the historical search, archaeological search for these icons. And that's really at the heart what the Samson effect is about. It takes something that a story that takes place in the Old Testament, brings it out into the modern world of archaeology, and I've crafted an action adventure about it, around it. So there are some similarities, I guess, with Dan Brown and some of his books, but not as much as you would see in, oh, like the Indiana Jones or even some of the action adventure authors that I mentioned before.
No, I read everything by James Rollins as well. He's kind of one of my, you know, big author guys. And what's interesting for me as a woman is that I quite like to write a book like James Rollins, but a lot of those authors are men. You know what I mean? It's quite interesting how that seems to have happened.
You know, I never really thought about it like that, but yeah, some of the action adventure authors are men. I know that James Rollins and Clive Cussler actually have a relationship to each other. In fact, I've been very privileged to be able to exchange mail and email with James Rollins, learning a little bit more about him and telling him, explaining some things about me. But there are some women writers that I read that just keep me riveted to the page. Jana Ivanovich is someone who can sit down and write a story that keeps me glued to the page from beginning to end. And my mind is blank. I'm trying to think of the woman who writes. She's like I think she's a British author that writes some of the Egyptian archaeologies, and my mind went totally blank at what her name is.
That's all good. No worries. It's interesting you mentioned James Rollins because, you know, I'm a fan of his. He's on Twitter as well now. So, you know, that's all good. So you mentioned Clive Cussler there, and you actually got a blurb quote from Clive Cussler. So how did you manage to do that?
You know, that's probably the single most asked question that I do get, and rightly so. I mean, when I first opened up the mail and I saw that, I was in shock. What I did is I made lists of authors that I said, okay, if I could have my wish come true, who would I want to write blurbs for me? And so I made a list of my A-list authors, five of them, that actually had an impact on me and my love for writing. Clive Cussler was one of them. And then I searched the internet. I found any public means that I could of communicating with these people. So I found either websites where I could submit a form, or I found email addresses. And I submitted email addresses to these people, and I basically introduced myself. I told him that I was a big fan. I normally don't write fan letters, but I just published a book, and I wanted to let him know how much I appreciate the influence that they had on me, not just as a reader, but as someone who has written and finished a book. And I didn't at that time ask, oh, by the way, could you do a blurb? Because you don't get a lot of buy-in if you – write someone you don't know, because they're getting this from hundreds and hundreds of people. But I wanted to kind of establish that first step of a relationship with them. Dirk Cussler, who's Clive's son, actually wrote me back an email thanking me, said he'd pass it on to his dad. And I was able to make that first initial step. So after I conversed back and forth with Dirk for a little bit, I asked him, I said, do you think your father would be interested in looking at my book and giving me a cover quote? And I just came out and asked him. He gave me all the disclaimers that he possibly could. He said, you know what? He said, I'll tell you what. He goes, I'm going to give you my address. You mail it to me. And he goes, I will make sure that Clive has an opportunity to look at it. He goes, I can't promise he will. I can't promise he'll read it. And I can't promise if he does, he'll send you anything. But I can promise that I will give him the opportunity. And so, you know, I felt like I just won the lottery then. And so he gave me his address, and the first thing I did was print out the entire manuscript. I ran down to the post office and I overnighted it to him. And I waited, 3-4 weeks. And by then I kind of lost the expectation of hearing back from Clive Cussler. And one day I was out checking the mail and I opened it up and there was a beige envelope with pre-printed Arizona address from Clive Cussler's residence. And I opened it up and probably the most nervous I ever was, because it was either a letter with a cover quote or it was a letter saying, hey, you know, appreciate your book, but at this time I can't give you a cover quote. Mm. And so I opened it up and it was a nice handwritten letter that gave me a wonderful quote that I was able to pull from the book.
Mm.
And I carried that thing with me for a week before my wife pried it out of my hands, put it into a frame, and made me carry around a photocopy of that to show people.
Oh,
that's really how excited I was. when I did that. But that's really the story of how I was able to get the quote from Clive Cussler. He didn't know it to me. There was no reason he should have given it to me. And it's something that, you know, I'm very, very grateful, more than he probably will ever know. That book probably, or that quote, the first month that my book came on sale, was responsible for over 1/3 of the entire sales for my book. And I still get people saying, hey, if Clive Cussler says it's good, I want to, you know, I'll take a look at it.
Mm. No, that's fantastic. So, wow, there's so much in that, but I guess, did that quote, because you said you sent him the printed manuscript, so had you got a publisher by then, and did that affect getting a publisher, or did you self-publish? I'm not quite clear on that.
Sure, I did. I had made the choice to self-publish. I had sent out the manuscript to a few agents, got a few interests, but I also knew what the odds were.
Mm.
We had started getting into the part in the publishing industry where publishers were starting to look more at getting authors who had already written and kind of cranking out books from them because of the economic situation that was going on. And new authors were less and less. You know, they were taking on less and less new authors. So I kind of knew from a business side that if the economy kept on going in the direction it was going to go in, it was going to be harder for a new author to get a book. And I thought, you know, I can really work this hard, or I can take matters into my own hands. I do have the marketing skills to kind of get my book out there, and I can see when I can do that. And so I made the choice to go ahead and self-publish myself, you know, very, very well aware of what the benefits and what the hurdles were going to be for someone who chooses to self-publish. I didn't go into it blindly, but I made the decision to do it, kind of counting on my marketing knowledge to help me there. And it was actually in the hands of my self-publisher, but I had to call them and ask them to hold the presses on the cover because I just got a quote from Clive Cussler, who was also gracious enough to send a letter to them, to me through them. Mm. So he not only sent me something directly, he sent something to them. So they were all excited when they got the letter, passed it on to me. But so I guess a short answer to your question is I did choose to go through iUniverse, which was a self-published company.
Mm. And are you writing the next book, or are you going to sort of re-release the Samson Effect and, you know, sort of try and build that up some more?
Actually, I'm about a third of the way through the sequel to the Samson Effect. A series of interesting events, I was contacted by a major Hollywood producer who saw the Samson Effect, the book, contacted me and asked me, said, hey, you know, I'm a Hollywood producer. Your book looks interesting. Do you mind sending me, a chapter of it? And I knew enough about the industry to know that, you know, anyone can claim to be a Hollywood producer. You basically can have a card printed up saying I'm a producer, and there are a lot of them out there.
Mm.
And so I didn't think much of it, but I said, sure, I'll send you one. And I can get into the story of how that
happened. Well, that was a question, yeah.
But to answer your answering your question, when we finally made the deal to make it a movie, he said, look, he goes, the movie studios want to see if this can be a series. Can you give me the series that you're planning out? Well, I hadn't planned out a series, but that weekend I created 4 more books. And so I'm actually working on the second one now.
That's fantastic. And yes, so just tell us a bit about that crazy coincidence that led to the movie.
Sure. So I get this email from this guy saying, hey, I'm a Hollywood producer. He goes, I stumbled across your website because people started congratulating me on writing a book. He said, my name is Tony Eldridge also.
It's so funny.
He goes, it looks interesting. Can you send me a copy? So I said, sure. And I sent him the copy and I started doing some research. And after I sent the email, the research I came back was, you know, this guy had worked on projects with the executive producer of the guy who made the Clear and Present Danger movies. Mm-hmm. He has some, you know, he was on some major projects in Hollywood. So then I started getting nervous. And 2 days later, he contacted me back. He goes, look, my partners and I, he goes, I own Lone Tree Entertainment. He goes, that's the shingle we'll be producing this through. He goes, my partner and I would love to see the whole manuscript. Can you send it over to me? And so I did. And within a week, he said, we decided to take this on as a project. And they were currently working with a project with Tom Cruise. They were working on another contract or a project with HBO that's going to be released here soon.
Yeah.
And so, you know, to me, not only am I thrilled that, you know, this has the potential of becoming a movie, but the marketing side of me says, wow, even if this never becomes a movie, this is a great marketing opportunity because you can legitimately say, you know, soon to be a motion picture. And that has a lot of marketing juice in it whatsoever.
I was just going to say, so is that continuing? Because I know, you know, actually a lot of books get optioned for movies, don't they? But then the actual making of the movie is the you know, the point.
Exactly. And I did get optioned. And, you know, the first option is kind of usually a test option. Unless you're already a known celebrity, you know, they put out like $100 or, you know, something relatively small, so there's no risk. And that gives them a right for a year to kind of fish it around. After that time, the cost to renew the option goes way up. And so that's your first real sign to see if they're serious about it or, you know, if they just were using this as kind of a fishing expedition. And the time came around where it was time to renew the option, and 3 days before it was due, I did get the letter from him with the new option and the check saying we'd like to renew this. So
brilliant.
That's where we're at, second part, which is a 2-year option period.
Mm. Wow. Well, so, that's really encouraging. So hopefully that will happen.
I would be so thrilled. My wife says, you know, it'd be interesting to see the credits because part of the option contract I signed says based on a novel by Tony Eldridge. And it's just going to be interesting to see a movie that says produced by Tony Eldridge, written by Tony Eldridge. And it'd be two different people.
It's fantastic. And actually today I'm going to a workshop called Making Movies from Books because it's something I'm really interested in as well, is, you know, finding out how one can write a book that translates into a movie more easily. So I'm so interested in that. Now, I could talk to you forever. But I'm aware of time, and I really want to ask you about your website, which is Marketing Tips for Authors, which is, you know, it's a great name, does what it says. And, you know, people can subscribe for your free video tips, and you've got lots and lots of things on there. So I wondered, because I do quite a lot of these, and I put a lot on my own website. So apart from blogging and social networking, we're going to take them out of the mix.
Okay.
Can you give us 3 top tips for authors on marketing?
3 top tips on authors when it comes to marketing. I guess going back to my previous job, as a sales and marketing director, what we did would be considered kind of guerrilla marketing. You know, what can we do to go out there and get the best bang for our limited buck? And if you can find a way to do that in marketing your book, that can really be a way to go. First and foremost is, I don't care if you're an A-list author, published author, or if you've written a new book that you've self-published on your own, books don't sell by themselves in a vacuum. You really have to develop relationships with other people to help you sell those books. And so if you start up a blog or if you start up a website and you kind of put your sign out in the internet world saying, here's my book, buy it, you're really going to be in for a lot of disappointment. But if you go out there and find bloggers who blog about your book, if you find people who read about your book and you get them involved by making a connection with them, first and foremost, that's one of the best things you can do to help market your book, is to make those connections with other people. Along the same lines, I would say, find a platform. That's really one of the reasons why I started Marketing Tips for Authors, to help me sell The Samson Effect and other books that I have. And Marketing Tips for Authors has nothing to do with The Samson Effect. But I was able to build this platform that brought more attention to The Samson Effect. And since I have, the sales for Samson Effect have gone way up. Mm. And authors, it's so vital that they find a way to create a platform for themselves. Now, my definition of a platform is, what can I do to create value for someone else? What can I either become an expert on, or what can I take my expertise and find a way to share it with other people who are looking for it? Mm. And really, you need to have two audiences in mind when you create this platform. As an author, one will be readers of your book. You know, perhaps you have mastered the art of creating tension or building suspense. Well, you might create a platform for other authors to teach them how to do it. Mm. But your second audience needs to be bloggers. There are a lot of people out there that help authors market books. I'm one of, you know, many, many good qualified people out there. But one of the things I did was find these other bloggers who are looking for content for their blogs. They're looking for people to help spread the word about them. And so my content is designed not just to help other authors, but to help other bloggers. And so I create a platform to help people who consume information and to help people disseminate information. Now, if you do those two things as an author, then you could be well on your way of getting more and more people to hear about you and by default hear about your book. Does that part make sense?
Yes, absolutely. No, that's great. And I think that the fact your story about Clive Cussler as well, and how you finally got that sort of that quote, is all about relationships. And
absolutely.
And you built that relationship with his son Dirk, and you know, you went through that. And I think that's similar. I mean, like you and I, we, you know, have a form of relationship on the internet that, you know, connecting through Twitter and through blogs and things, and then now we're talking, and you know, that's how people do it now, isn't it? It's got to be a relationship over time. You can't just, you know, approach someone immediately and say, buy my book.
You can't, you're right. And you can't really approach an expert and say, hey, tell all your readers about me. You
exactly.
have to build that relationship. In fact, you're familiar with John Kramer.
Yes, of course.
He was a guest blogger on my blog early on, and his blog post was just about that. It was about the importance of building relationships, and that kind of solidified it for me in this. So, you know, make friends with people who blog for readers, kind of get out there with people who can help you get, you know, the message about your book out there, create a platform and good content for other people, other readers and other bloggers. The third thing I would say is learn how to use tools that can cram 80 hours into a 40-hour week. That is absolutely so critical. You can get so tied up in your blog or your website or Twitter. You can make Twitter a 40-hour a week job if that's what you want. You really can. But in order to really make all this work for you, you've got to find tools to help you automate a lot of your work so that you really can cram 80 hours worth of work in a 40-hour work week. And there are tools out there. There are tutorials out there. There are a number of things out there that can help you do that as an author. And if you can master being in three places at once, then you're on the road to success, because the internet is such a big place and it allows you to be in multiple places at once.
No, those are fantastic tips. And before we finish, I just had one more question, which was about your video tips, because you mentioned earlier you're a sales and marketing director and your company did video training, and you do video tips for authors on your site that people can sign up for. So I just wondered, you know, why do you do videos, and how effective is it for you in getting traffic and building relationships?
Well, I create videos because if most people are like me, they learn better by watching than they do simply reading. Going back to my previous life as a sales and marketing director for a company that created training videos for products like Flash, you can read a technical manual and be frustrated when the day is over because you can't recreate what you want to do.
Mm.
But if you can look over the shoulders of an expert who can walk you through how to do something, that can make all the difference in the world. Now, I know that the target audience I have are not tech people. They're authors. Mm-hmm. They can be brilliant people when it comes to creating and crafting a very interesting story. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they have all the marketing skills to do all the technical things that you need to do in today's world when it comes to marketing the book, your book. And so since I have a lot of those skills, what my vision was to show people on my desktop how to start a blog, how to make your blog send your headline when you put a new post out to your Twitter account, how to do all the things that you really need to know how to do that people don't stop to think, you know what, this is part of marketing. And so it really addresses the technical aspects of marketing in this climate and in this world. And I've not sold any ads to my subscription. I've not paid for placement. It's all been totally done word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there probably will come a time in the near future when I create a product that I'm going to sell, then I may buy some advertisements to tell people about this free subscription, because it will pay for itself if you do that. But right now, without doing any kind of advertising, the only time I ever mention my video subscription is on my blog and in Twitter. I constantly, every day, get multiple people signing up for it. And so it's growing faster than what I really thought it would grow. And that is kind of the vicious circle, because people who sign up for that, I have an opportunity not only to share my videos with them, but any products I may come out with, any websites I want them to visit. And so it's a wonderful business model once you get it going. But in order to make something like that work, you have to offer something of value. At Technical Lead, that's how we went. When I joined the company, they had about 70,000 subscribers. When I left, about 2.5 years after that, we were well over 500,000. And our unsubscribe rate was ridiculously low, like less than 1%. But that's because we gave out multiple free videos every single week. And so people didn't want to unsubscribe from it. That's sort of the same premise I'm going with now. And right now, my unsubscribe rate has been less than 1% because of the type of value that I think I'm offering to people. So it's been a great, it really, strip away everything else about it, Joanna. It's really a marketing tool. As much as I like to share information and help authors, you know, the video tip subscription is really a marketing tool helping me kind of get in front of new subscribers. And it's been wonderfully successful. But I'm borrowing from my previous role and experience and kind of copying what we did in that other job.
No, that's fantastic. And so how can people find out about the video tips, about the Sampson effect, about everything else that you're doing?
Well, right now, everything is kind of hubbing around my blog, and that's at blog.marketingtipsforauthors.com. If you go there, you can have access to the free daily blogs I put out. There's links that will take you to a place where you can sign up for the free weekly video tips. I actually started to release the Sampson Effect out in a serial blog. So for a short period of time, you can actually go online and start reading the Sampson Effect while it's available publicly. So there's a link to that. And any product, in fact, I'm working on a book right now. It's already written, and I'm doing some of the revising on how to conduct a Twitter contest. Any links when that book is ready for purchase will be available there from the blog. So if you go to blog.marketingtipsforauthors.com, or if I can talk you into putting a link on your website.
Yes, oh, absolutely. There'll be a link there. Mm.
That blog will be the hub of everything in my universe.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. And just a question there, I was just thinking about the Sampson Effect. Are you going to podcast that, you know, read it out on do a podcast novel? Would that be something you'd think about?
You know what? That would be something that I would think about, but I unfortunately don't think I have a commercial voice.
Oh, really? Yet. I think you've got a lovely voice.
Oh, well, that's sweet of you. That's sweet of you. I would love to do it. I'd say over half the books I read, because I travel a lot, are done through audiobooks.
And yes, so absolutely. And I'm a real fan of audiobooks as well. And, you know, the J.C. Hutchins' Seventh Son, that got me hooked on listening to these podcast novels. And I'm now listening to a podcast novel. And it sounds, you know, I think your book sounds like it would make a brilliant one. So that's a little encouragement for you.
Well, I do appreciate it. I will pass on this. If you don't know the name Scott Brick.
Oh, yes.
He is. Okay. Yeah. Go to his website. He has contests. He started his own company. And he is one of the most brilliant narrators when it comes to audiobooks. He's won tons of awards. But if you're interested in audiobooks, you can learn so much by going to his website.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you ever so much for your time, Tony. That was just so interesting.
Well, thank you for having me. I've been looking forward to this since the invitation was extended. I will tell you that your site has been a wonderful resource for me and my readers, and I'm sure it's going to continue to be so. So I thank you for the information that you pass on to my readers through my blog.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales, and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time!